You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 259.
Hello, everybody. We are so excited to be here. This is like the most exciting time of the year. I should take a step back. Okay. Hello, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely, wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And it is episode 259, odd-numbered episode. That means we have a guest this week on the Family Gamers Podcast. We have the, like, I don't know, marketing maestro of, oh, I like the alliteration, of Thunderworks Games, Tim Viernick. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Andrew and Anitra, for having me on. I'm excited to be here. I'm about as odd as this numbered episode, so it's perfect.
I love it.
It works out very well, so.
It all fits together nicely.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's a super exciting time. It is the beginning of con season, finally, after 18 months or whatever of COVID-induced misery. This is the most rested all of us are going to be for the next 6 months before it all begins.
And most places anyway, children are back in school.
I know.
The days have suddenly gotten a lot quieter in our house.
Yes.
Not perfectly quiet, but a lot quieter.
It's good. Okay. However, episode 259, I have to inform you, this is in fact the worst episode ever.
What?
Okay, it's not the worst episode ever, but my fact for the episode number 259 is that the Simpsons episode, the 259th episode of The Simpsons, was called the worst episode ever because this is the episode of the show where Comic Book Guy has a heart attack.
Oh, worst episode ever.
Yeah. So he's laying in bed and the doctor says, well, sir, it turned out that you had a cardiac episode. And he replies,
worst episode ever.
Yeah.
Or worst heart attack ever.
No, worst. He says worst episode ever.
Like you had a cardiac episode.
Yes, he had a cardiac episode. Exactly. So anyway, so that's my fact about the number 259. Worst episode ever.
I can't do it with like the nasal awfulness.
I don't know. I don't know who did the voice for Comic Book Guy, but whatever. It doesn't matter. Anyway, so that's our fact. We also have a sponsor.
All right. Continuing on the theme from last week, we talked about how board games are, or at least should be, covered by your homeowner's or renter's insurance. So let's address the should part of the question. Should you get additional coverage? With any risk, you have four options. Here's how to think about them. If the chance of the risk happening is low, and the consequences are low, you can simply accept the risk. For example, paper cuts, while annoying, shouldn't impact how you live your life. Next are risks where the chances of it happening is low, and the consequences are high. In that case, you should avoid that risk if you can, like jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. You should be able to avoid that kind of a risk. The third category are risks that have a high probability of happening, but fairly small consequences. With these, you can take steps to mitigate either the frequency or the impact of the risk. For example, like taking a defensive driving course to prevent the likelihood of getting a speeding ticket. Finally, there are risks that have a high probability and a high impact if they happen. These are the risks you want to transfer by getting insurance. So you need to consider if the potential loss of your game library has a high probability of happening, like, say, if you store them in your garage or in your basement, and if the loss would be significant, like you have an original signed copy of Sid Saxon's Cosmic Encounter. Then you would likely want to make sure it's covered by insurance. You may still want some of it covered if the probability is low and the loss would be significant, but if your loss wouldn't be that significant, then you can just mitigate that risk. First Move Financial doesn't sell insurance, but they can help point you in the right direction and help you interpret the policies you currently have. To schedule a call with First Move, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers. Thank you so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show.
Well, so at this point in the show, so we are going to talk about Thunderworks Games, second half of the show. We're going to talk about all sorts of cool stuff that Thunderworks is doing. We're going to talk about role player adventures. We're going to talk about Cape May, which is something I'm really excited to hear about, and whatever else is out there that I don't know about. But I'm excited to learn. As everybody knows, I am a Thunderworks fanboy. But first half of the show, we are going to talk about games that we have been playing lately.
Yeah.
So, Tim, you get to go first. Our guest always gets to go first. What games have you been playing lately?
Well, the last probably month, I've been playing through Sleeping Gods from Red Raven Games, mostly as a way to do a little comparison, because, of course, Sleeping Gods is a story-driven campaign game like Role Player Adventures. So just wanted to get a feel for how it compares to Role Player Adventures. And I've really enjoyed it. And I'm a real Ryan Lockett fan. I love Red Raven Games. Always enjoyed them. So it's this one is also really great. The other one is, of course, Terraforming Mars Ares Expedition, which has been a lot of fun for a relatively quick playing version of Terraforming Mars, especially if you play a lot of Terraforming Mars like I do. Then playing the Ares Expedition is pretty fast because you're used to it. But being a sort of a simultaneous action game, it moves pretty fast. So you can squeeze it in about an hour with four players. So it's been on our table quite a bit.
Cool. Yeah, that does sound like, I have such a complicated past with Terraforming Mars. It's a game that it feels to me like it's a game that I should play a lot, but it's not really realistic to happen, you know?
Well, especially if you pull out all of the expansions, it can get to be a long game, but it's a lot of fun. I enjoy playing it, but I find that Ares Expedition is... it hits all the right spots from Terraforming Mars without being a long, drawn-out game. So
awesome. I mean, I think that's pretty much exactly what you'd want to hear, right?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I like seeing games like that where it's like, we took the game that you love, but that is too long, and we made it less long.
Yeah, we got rid of the long parts and kept
everything
parts.
Else.
Yeah. Yeah. Monopoly deal.
Well, I didn't love Monopoly, but that's another story.
All right. Well, I've only played two games this week.
Three games.
Three games?
Yes, because I played them all
true.
With you.
That's true. I have in fact played three games. Okay, well. All right, so I'll talk about the first one. The first one is Super Mega Lucky Box from Game Right Games. This looks like a game, like straight out of Schoolhouse Rocks, if you look at the cover. I mean, it's just got all of those like balloon letters and the bright colors, and it's really, you know, it's got a lot of those sharp contrasts and all that stuff. Super Mega Lucky Box is a... It is a flipping right. It's a flipping right.
It's a flipping right.
It's a flipping right where you have a bunch of 3x3 grids of numbers, and you are trying to on all these separate cards, and you're trying to complete those cards. And when you complete a column or a row, you get something, and that something could be some various token, or it could be another number that you could then turn around and check off on something else. Some of those tokens are just points at the end of the game. Some of those tokens allow you to modify the flipped numbers to match the other things that you're trying to cross out. Mm-hmm. The sooner you cross out all of the things on cards, the better, because you get more points for them if you cross them out in earlier rounds. And it does have a little bit of that combo-tastic stuff that we always talk about with games like Fleet the Dice Game, where it's like, oh, I did this, which means I can do that, which means I can do that. But it's at a kid level, so it's not quite as overwhelming as something like Fleet could be.
It's definitely a lot simpler than something like a Fleet the Dice Game, and you really only have two or three choices most of the times of like where you could put a number, because there's only nine numbers to be had, and most grids do not have all nine numbers. They have duplicates of a couple within there. It's worth mentioning this is by Phil Walker Harding,
who makes basically, you know, everything. 80% of what we like.
But I think this really takes that combo-y roll and write, flip and write idea and distills it down to a fast, relatively easy game where the bonuses to take the right actions are very, very clear.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when we played this, you had played it before. It was my first time playing it. I was ready for bed. I mean, I tried to hide it, but I was like, I just want to go to bed.
I was just like, 10 minutes, honey. 10 minutes.
Yeah, she's like, come on, play this game. I'm like, ugh. She pulled out a review game that I wanted to play.
It worked!
I'm like, oh, fine. But I got it. I understood it. It was engaging. Yeah. We played through it. I had a great time. So yeah, Super Mega Lucky Box from Game Right is a pretty fun game.
Yeah.
So, and then last night, we got to play two of our favorites.
Yes. Speaking of Phil Walker Harding, mm-hmm. We played Imhotep, which is one of my favorite games. I have not played it in 2 years. So I was super psyched. We had two friends over and I was like, let me show you this game. It's my favorite. We build with blocks.
Now, I have to ask you, because Imhotep, I love it too. A great game. But boy, it can be really mean. I mean, how
yes,
do you
it can.
how do you keep a peaceful household after playing a game of Imhotep when you sail that ship and leave Andrew like way behind, you know, while you're building your obelisk or something?
Well, yeah. For what it's worth, so it was Andrew and I and two of our friends, and we were trying to show the two friends how to play, and in the end, both of them beat both of us.
Right.
So that's I didn't fair. Feel too bad.
It was us and another couple just yeah. to make it even better. Now, I'm well known for, I'm not a sore loser, but I don't go through the process of losing particularly well. But once the game is over, I don't care anymore. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's the kind of
aches during the game.
Yeah. It's the kind of game that if you play it just to hate on the other person, it becomes pretty brutal. But, you know, if you're just trying to strategize and play through, you know, each person trying to do their best move, I think it works out pretty well. And it is exciting.
Yeah, I agree. And that's pretty much what I was trying to tell our friends. Like, they were starting to get into the hate sailing, as it were. And I was like, look, you can do that if you want, but the only way you're actually going to get more points is to put blocks out there. Like, you can shunt people off to where they'll get as few points as possible, but that still leaves you with 0 points unless you have blocks on the boat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we played and we reviewed Imhotep the Duel, which is the two-player version, but we actually like Imhotep at two players more than Imhotep the Duel, period. So, yeah, we ended up moving on from that game, actually.
I agree. I also think that Imhotep with two players is just fine. I don't know that Duel does it better.
I think Duel just does something different.
Yeah,
it's not better or worse. It's just different. And I really like the physicality of the regular old Imhotep. And like actually building stuff with the blocks is really satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other game that we played last night was Quacks of Quedlinburg with half of the Urwitch's expansion, which is pretty much how we play it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
So we picked up the Urwitch's expansion to get the fifth player.
Yes.
But we also like the Loco Weed. Like, it's a cool extra add-on.
Yeah, well, it's a wild token. Like, yeah. This copies the last colored token you put down.
Or whatever. Yeah, okay. we played with sure. basically all new books.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So, mm-hmm. because we were playing with new players, I kind of looked at him like, Andrew, I don't want you to be able to use your usual strategy here in Quacks.
Works.
And I'm like, and I won't use my usual strategy either. We will pick different books specifically for those couple of tokens and then just kind of fill in everywhere else. And it made for a really interesting game.
Yes.
At some point, we will try this with our kids, too, because they enjoy Quacks of Quedlinburg. But I think they're still, especially our youngest, is still trying to get his head wrapped around how the various potions work. So changing it on him would probably not be a good choice right now.
Right. That game is just really good.
I have to admit that I have not played it. It's one of the titles that I just haven't gotten, and for whatever reason I don't think Keith has it either, so it's not a game that comes up in our game group. But I've heard great things about it when I've seen reviews and watched some plays, and it looks lots of fun. Maybe I'll get a chance someday.
Yeah, well, you know, so the thing about Quacks that I'll say, even though, you know, we love it, we have a great time with it, it's a fantastic family game, it's relatively lightweight. There is some degree of chance in this. There is a significant degree of chance in this game. Like, you're playing the numbers, but ultimately, at the end of the day, you're blind pulling tokens out of a bag. And that means that you can plan, you can be the best planner in the world, but you just get unlucky and things happen. And, I mean, we have friends who really hate that in games. And so there are people who do not like Quacks, and I disagree with them, but I don't fault them for it because I completely
understand
where they're coming from.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if this will be an exclusive to your podcast, but I will admit openly, I'm not ashamed to say this, that I am not afraid of chance and I am not afraid of lighter weight games. There's a place for all of that. I think there's a place for lighter weight games. And sometimes, you know, you just have a day where you want to play something and you just don't want to have to think too much about it. And I pull those out all the time, and I love them. I have a whole stack of games that I like to do, and sometimes they're games that I'll take with friends to a restaurant or to a pub, and we'll just play something real easy. And chance isn't bad. I mean, chance is just – it's part of the game. It's fun. You get excited when the dice do what you want it to do, and when they're not rolling the way you want, you get upset. But, you know, it's like – it doesn't always have to be a heavy strategy game. I like those too, but there's a, you know, there's a place for all of it. Sometimes you just, you don't want to have to really get the brain really churning, you know, the hamster wheel spinning too hard.
Right. Yeah. And when you're a parent of three children, none of which are even teenagers yet, there's a lot of, I don't want to have to do any more things.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. Well, and I think Quacksaw Quedlinburg fits super well into this as a family game because there are a lot of things to choose from when you get to make a choice, but choices only come up other than pull or don't pull out of your bag. Okay. Most of the choices is this just, do I keep pulling or do I stop? The only time that you get a lot of choices when you're buying something. And even then, they put enough constraints on it that it's not something where you sit there forever and be like, it's too much. I don't know what to do. What's going to happen if I pull this? Then I have to do that. Then I have to do that. It's a very straightforward, like, do I want to get this one? Do I want to get that one?
Right.
Pick one and move on. So I really appreciate that, that it's a good balance there of there's a lot of luck and most of the choices are really, really straightforward.
There's always a place for that type of game. So yeah, no shame in that. Nobody should ever say, you know, oh, this game's too light. This game's too much luck. You know, there's, again, I sometimes think that people who play very heavy Euros, but play them a lot, I think in some respects, it's almost the same thing. If you played a heavy Euro like 20 or 30 times, after a while, your strategy, you already know what you're going to do. In some ways, it's almost the same as playing a lighter game because you already know what you're going to do, the strategies you're going to use. And so, you know.
You're kind of at that point going through the motions.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we got through that nice and quick. We didn't play a lot of games this week, but I really enjoyed the games we did play. Yeah,
this was a quality week, not a quantity week.
Yes.
All right. Is there anything else that you've played, Tim, that that you haven't mentioned yet?
Well, I mean, obviously, I've been playing lots of our games as we're getting ready for convention season and going through with the rest of our smaller crew for this year, but making sure everybody's on board with teaching them and giving highlights and stuff. So we've been playing a lot of that. So I'll certainly talk about those. But that's pretty much been what it has been as it's busy as we get ready. There's sadly been very little free gaming time.
Right. I know it's you kind of look at it and it's like, man, I have so much to do to play board games. Never mind. The best work is when it doesn't feel like work, right?
Exactly.
Well, why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, we will dive right into all those games that Tim has been playing.
All right, sounds good.
We'll be right back.
What's that up in the air? Is it a bird? Is it a plane?
No, it's a baby rhino hero. And Spider Monkey. This is a snap review for Rhino Hero Jr., one of the HABA My Very First games. Rhino Hero Jr. was designed by Steven Strumpf and Scott Frisco, the same team who designed the original Rhino Hero. Up to 4 children ages 2 and up can play, and it only takes about 5 minutes. So let's talk about the art in this game. Like other HABA games for very young children, the pieces here are chunky and inviting, and every set of walls has colorful characters on it. These characters all over the pieces really give the tower some personality. All of the colors here are bright and easy to match, and the numbers are very large, and reinforced by bluebirds that you can count on each wall segment. So let's talk about the mechanics and how you play the game. Rhino Hero Jr. is all about matching and sequencing, along with your usual turn-taking and other basic game skills for young children. Start with free play. Just look with your kids at each floor or roof and each set of walls.
And then, when they've really begun to get accustomed to those, then you can move on to the three game modes that are described in the rulebook. First, try a matching game, where you line up the floors with matching colors together. Once all six floors are in order, find the set of walls that goes with each one. The second game introduces the stacking. You'll need to start with the largest walls and end with the smallest ones. Don't worry about what color the roof tile is, just put it like this, unless you want even more of a stacking challenge. In the third game variation, baby spider monkey roof cards are added, and now this turns into a memory game. Keep looking for the next roof or floor in order and placing them, stacking with the towers, until Rhino Hero Jr. can scale the whole building. So let's move on and talk about what I expected from this game. This is a habit game for very young children. It says so right on the box, my very first games. I expected chunky pieces that are hard to mess up, easy for kids to hang on to, and it's a Rhino Hero game, so I expected stacking. I mean, it can't be Rhino Hero without stacking. And that's pretty much it for my expectations. Let's move on to the surprises. All right, my first one is not technically a surprise, but I sat down and played this with a little 2.5-year-old friend, and the most exciting part for him was knocking down the tower. We built and rebuilt and knocked down at least a dozen times in the space of about 15 minutes. I'd say it was a hit, especially for a kid like him who really doesn't know anything about board games, hasn't played any kind of games, his parents aren't big gamers. It was a great experience for him. The tower itself is fun to build, even when you're an older kid, like my 7-year-old Elliot. He had fun building it, and also knocking it down, and matching up the colors and making sure he did it right. Even though there's not really a winner to the game, it's still challenging, especially if you allow stacking out of order. You know, picking up a random roof tile and then having to go with the next piece that matches that one, not necessarily the next one in order. So, recommendations. Is Rhino Hero Jr. a good fit for your family? I would say if you have a kid somewhere between the ages of 2 and 4, this is an excellent choice. Rhino Hero Jr. will help them develop matching skills, motor skills, and patience, along with helping children to identify numbers and sequencing, and talking about things like turn-taking. Rhino Hero Jr. will provide a foundation for kids to understand other board games, maybe even moving on to Rhino Hero when they're 5 or 6 years old, and we highly recommend it. I'm going to give Rhino Hero Jr. 5 out of 5 roof tiles. And that's Rhino Hero Jr. in a snap. We are here with Tim Vernig, and we are super excited to talk about anything and everything that Thunderworks is doing.
I mean, I'm so excited that you're excited.
Yeah, like, that's it's like off-gassing of excitement.
Off-gassing? That's what you came up with? I was going to go with like sympathetic excitement or something.
Excitement?
Well,
wow!
I don't know.
You're getting a contact high of excitement. Yes.
I'm excited that you're excited, and so that's great. We're all excited.
Right. Well, there's a lot of excitement to go. I'm trying to get you all hyped up for Gen Con because we can't be here, which is kind of a bummer. But
yeah, well, you know, I mean, this is a crazy year. Obviously, last year not having any conventions was disappointing. Of course, not seeing all of the people that we love to see, other publishers and the fans and media people. But I'll tell you, it was a very, very productive year for us. So we kind of bunkered down and really got to work. And there's just some amazing stuff coming, which I think is going to show that a year of not seeing anybody was worth it. So
I think it probably all depends on where projects were hitting different publishers at different times as to whether or not it was a good time or a bad time.
Yeah.
Because there are certain publishers where they were really ready to show some stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff was just kind of coming out.
And now it's been sitting around for a year.
And now it's been sitting around for a year. And it really, really hurt those people. But then there's other publishers who were able to get stuff out before things really started to shut down and kind of ride that wave and work on development of some other stuff, you know, at the same time. And it really worked out well for them. So it's really dependent on the publisher, it seems like, to really get a sense of who had a good year, who had a bad year.
Well, I mean, the one thing as board game hobbyists and fans and publishers, if there's one thing that we know how to do, it's be strategic and have strategies. And so a lot of publishers had to be extra strategic in figuring out ways to get their titles seen. And so it was a learning year. And it was, I think, you know, I'm sure you've talked about and most people have read about all of the supply chain problems that are further delaying games, and we're experiencing a little bit of that. But the good news is that there's still a lot of great games going to be at Gen Con and Origins and stuff later in the year for PAX Unplugged. And, you know, I mean, we have stuff coming out this year. Some of it could have come out last year, but we delayed it. But we'll have a lot of stuff coming in 2022 too, which I can give you a little kind of spoiler sneak peek at.
Ooh.
but mostly we can talk about maybe a little bit of the background and kind of where we've come from and where we are at now and where we're going, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, All right, so you said that you did a lot of really great stuff in 2021. So here's what, off the top of my head, here's what I can think about. I know about the digital release of Bullfrogs. I know about Role Player Adventures, which was kind of already coming out of the end of the pipeline, I think, by then. It was pretty much, it had gone through Kickstarter and all that stuff. And then Cape May, I know about. I don't know about much. I mean, Fiend to Familiars was before that. Yep. I don't know what else there is.
Well, okay, so let's go back to the very beginning. Let's go back to the dawn of time. All right. It's 2013. And the brains behind Thunderworks Games, Keith Mateka, left Konami, where he was in video game design and project manager for many games that Konami publishes, and worked here in Madison at Raven. And he came up with an idea. He had in his head a game that would later become Role Player. Mm-hmm. He had a couple releases before that, Bullfrogs, obviously, and then Blend Off, a smaller game. Mm-hmm. But really, the beginning, our flagship game was Role Player, and that was released in 2016. And so Role Player began this universe that Keith created, the world of Ulos, and from there, it just grew organically. The world kind of was fleshed out. So Role Player was this dice rolling and kind of dice mitigation game where you try to create your fantasy role-playing character and then introduced monsters and minions where you took that character and you could go out and fight monsters. And then obviously the third expansion to Role Player, Fiends and Familiars, each of those games built out the universe. In addition to that, we also released Cartographers. I'm sure some of your listeners have played Cartographers, right? Everybody's played.
We love it. Yep.
Cartographers,
everybody's played.
Yeah, right.
Come on.
We consider Cartographers was kind of the game of the pandemic because a lot of people played Cartographers, you know, just using Zoom because all you had to do is you know, send everybody a PDF file of the map and you could just play it remotely, which a lot of people did. It's our flip and write game. And from there, then Lockup, which was sort of a area control, majority set collection, all sorts of stuff going on, which takes place in the Kolbach prison, which is part of the Role Player universe. And all of that culminates in the project, the sort of swan song. I don't know what's the correct term for it. The pinnacle. Yes, that's right. Where all this was going, out of Keith's imagination, and then adding in the two writers. We have two brothers, the Ryan brothers, that created this world and wrote a lot of the text for that. Is Role Player Adventures, which brings it all together, right? A campaign style, choose your own adventure game where the choices that you make will change the storyline. So Role Play Adventures, which we kickstarted last year, it's a very successful Kickstarter. It will be going out to retail and to the backers in the fall. We will not have them, unfortunately, for Gen Con or Origins. We will have a demo copy. People can check it out, but we don't have it available. It's on the boat. It's a big game. It's heavy, and it took a lot of production. There's 12 adventure modules in the base box, and each adventure is like, you know, 30 pages. So, I mean, it's like,
oh, wow.
12 books, like mini books. So with that, it took a lot of time, a lot of printing. There's tons of cards in there, but this is the game I think that was what Keith had dreamt about when Role Player was invented, to create a world where people can go into it, really interact in it, become a part of it. And it's so immersive. Like when we were playtesting it and going through the adventures, like I just got so, like, I can't believe how great these stories are. I mean, people are going to really get in. I mean, like there's highs and lows, and the characters that you meet, you really get to, you know, really get into, like, what happens to them, you know, what, and mm-hmm. for people who are familiar with Cartographers, like the map maker on the cover of Cartographers, one of the characters in Role Player Adventure, you finally get to meet him, right?
Right.
Awesome.
So it is really, as you said, the pinnacle, the dream of what Keith had when he thought up Role Player. So we'll have that. The other is the follow up to Cartographers, Cartographers Heroes. It's a standalone, not an expansion. So people can buy Cartographers Heroes, have never played Cartographers, and it just adds additional things to the Cartographers universe. So it's a flip and write, but rather than just drawing terrain and having the monster raids, also now you have hero cards. So heroes can come out and fight the monsters and cross off the squares where monsters are causing problems on your map. And then because you can never have enough map packs, we're also releasing 3 map packs that people can add to either Cartographers or Cartographers Heroes. There's going to be Neblis, the Plane of Flame. So Neblis is one of the places that you will visit in Role Player Adventures. And it has a giant volcano in the middle of the map. So there's some extra little cards that go along with it, and you mix them in. And so in addition to the monster raid cards, there's also a card that'll come out that'll cause the volcano to spew lava, and it flows out through the game. And then the second map pack is Ephril, the Plane of Knowledge. So that one is kind of like islands on the map. So you have all these different sections on the map that you can connect when you spend gold to create a kind of a shipping route, if you will, between islands. And so that adds a different aspect to the map. And then the third is Undercity, the Depths of Sabek. Lockup is one of the sections in the Lockup expansion, which I'll talk about in a second. The Undercity is in there as well. So it's kind of like a labyrinth that you can move around. And that one's kind of adds extra challenge too, because you have to kind of go down through underground and chart your way back up out to the exit where you came in. More variety to those maps. So that'll add a whole ton of content to Cartographers. And people can take Cartographers and Cartographers Heroes and mix them together or keep them separate. And anytime you create additional content for a game where you have smaller boxes, guess what? Somebody's going to want a collector's box, right? So we're going to have a collector's box which will fit everything, including colored pencils, and all of that will be available for order on our website, that I think we're going to keep as a website exclusive. and probably sell at cons. That one will probably have next year, but it'll be out. So, you know, people can pick up Cartographers and Cartographers Heroes, get the box next year and combine it all together if they want. So
I think there's a strong possibility that that's going to be for us.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right. And I know you want to know about Cape May, right? You want to talk a little bit about Cape May?
Yeah. So,
yeah. I've
seen some pictures and I know nothing else.
Pretty much that. So let's talk about Cape May. Tell us everything all about right. Cape May.
So Cape May was a design that we got from a first-time designer, never done a board game design before. And when Keith got the prototype from the designer, whose name is Eric Masso, we kind of fell in love with it right away. Eric Masso, the designer, grew up visiting Cape May, New Jersey with his family. If you don't know, Cape May, New Jersey is, I think, probably one of the first major East Coast kind of seaside tourist destinations. So turn of the century, people would visit Cape May. It has a very iconic lighthouse. And the artist, Michael Menzel, did the artwork for it. And the cover is beautiful. And what I love about the cover is when you look at it, you can almost feel the wind. You can almost taste the sea air, and you can hear the seagulls cawing or whatever seagulls do.
There's a real sense of movement on the cover, like you're almost like riding on a seagull, like past this lighthouse into.
When we first saw the cover design, we all kind of said we're worried that the woman that's kind of leaning over the railing looks like she's going to fall over as she's trying to reach out to let a seagull land on her hand.
That is obviously a woman who has never experienced actual seagulls. Who steal
you normally food. Don't want a seagull landing on your hand. But
no.
So Cape May, we will have a demo copy at Gen Con and Origins. We will not have it for sale, but it will be available in retail in the late fall, early winter. Here's the thing. Keith really is drawn to games that have a lot of different kind of mechanics going on in it. So it's really difficult to categorize it. It's an economic game in, I think, a lot of respects. You play an entrepreneur trying to develop property in this growing seaside resort of Cape May, New Jersey. So you have 7 movement cards in your hand. You play these movement cards to move around a map, which is actually sort of the map of Cape May, New Jersey at the turn of the century. It has street names on it that are actually located in Cape May. And in fact, we've been approached by some stores and gift shops in Cape May, New Jersey to sell the game because when they heard about it, they're like, this is perfect. We like people who come to Cape May would love to buy this game. Sure. So you'll use your movement cards to move around the map and you will build either homes or businesses. And you upgrade those homes and businesses into Victorian houses or to larger businesses that create income for you. And each season, and there's the four seasons that you move the lighthouse mini around to indicate the sort of each season that you're in. At the end of each season, then whatever income that you have earned by building those buildings, you earn that. And then you can use that on the next season to build or upgrade additional properties. And so when the game is over, really what you're looking at is whoever has the majority in each of the different sectors of the resort town, whoever has the most Victorians, whoever has the most businesses will get points. There's also a really fun little set collection where you can collect bird tokens out of a bag because Cape May, New Jersey, one of the things that people go there to do is to bird watch. I guess it's a migratory stopover for a lot of birds coming from Europe and Canada.
That why that that lady on the cover is trying to reach out and grab.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I guess
why a seagull if it's a microphone? Seagulls are everywhere.
I know. Well, it's it.
That part I couldn't say.
It's iconic for I guess a seaside town. So, but the bird tokens are in this bag, so you can draw bird tokens, and you're trying to collect sets of them. And there's some kind of little extras in the bag too. You can pull out a balloon because a lot of people will fly hot air balloons there. Also a zeppelin or a, what do you call them? A blimp, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The reason for that is that there was a well-known actual historic occurrence where a German blimp had come over from Europe and landed in Cape May. The game has history in it. There's cards that come out that are event cards that are actual events in Cape May, New Jersey. So one season, the mosquitoes were so bad that most of the tourists had to leave. So it was a terrible season because of that. There was a fire that broke out and burned a lot of homes in a certain areas. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, which I think makes it a pretty fun game. It plays up to four players. We have a solo mode because one of the requirements Keith has for all of his games is there has to be a solo mode. It's
I appreciate that.
Yeah, a fun little solo that has an AI that I think works really, really well. Yeah, and it plays in about, I would say, 90 minutes, 60 minutes. It's pretty fast. It's not a long game, which I appreciate. It doesn't overstay its welcome, but there's enough going on that I think it's pretty enjoyable. So, yeah, we'll have that, and we're excited to show that off to people.
Well, I'm excited to see that at PAX Unplugged, because I will be at PAX Unplugged.
We will have it there for you to see.
All right. I'm pumped.
So, I mean, of course, I have to give a shout out to, I guess, I don't know if we can call him our house artist, our artist for most of the role player stuff, Lucas Ribeiro. He does a lot of the artwork for the role player, cartographers, lockup. We're glad to have him on our team, and he does all the great stuff. Also, JJ Ariosa did a lot of the artwork for lockup and role player as well. So we've got a great team. And then always great when you can reach out to other great artists, you know, like Michael Menzel or Vincent Dutre. We'll talk about for his artwork for Tenpenny Parks. And then I'm sure you may have seen Dual Powers, Revolution 1917. That was our two-player head-to-head game that the artwork was done by Quan Chai Moria. I'm sure your listeners know Quan Chai Moria. And Quan Chai did the artwork for Dual Powers that is, I think, evocative of sort of that propaganda posters from the Soviet Union of that time. Dual Powers Revolution 1917 was a local designer, Brett Myers, who's a friend of ours. He lives here in Madison, Wisconsin, where Thunderworks is, and he's done quite a few other designs, and Keith got him to do a two-player game for us. I think it's not always a great comparison, but a lot of people have likened it to sort of like a Twilight Struggle light, if you will. It's not as complex as Twilight Struggle. And plays in about, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, but a fun two-player game. I think it got lost a little bit in the lockup cartographers hype, and we've sort of kind of run out. It's sort of slowly going into out of print status, but there still are copies out there. But I think it's a fun two-player game. It looks heavy. It isn't. It just has a heavy...
I mean, the theme. The theme is kind of heavy, yeah.
But that's really. I mean, I don't want to say it's not pasted on theme, but it isn't really a historic game. You don't have to care about
sure.
the struggle for Petrograd. You know. It's although that's in there, it really is just a two-player sort of head-to-head battle it out area control game. So
I mean, you've sold me. He enjoys Twilight Struggle, and I can't do it. And so this sounds a lot more approachable.
And this is the kind of game that you could play in a high school, homeschool context and then talk about those things
yeah.
that are in the game.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's kind of cool. All right, well, we are just about out of time, but you did tease that you might talk about what's coming.
All right.
So I do want to give you the chance to do that.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be happy to do that. I mean, it comes as no surprise that I rattle on and just gush about all of our games. So we left a little bit of time at the end. So we want to talk about Vincent Dutre, and we do have a game coming out in 2022 called 10 Penny Parks. Some of your astute listeners may have seen something on BGG where we originally called it Theme Parks. That name we thought we liked it, and then we realized that it's about as generic as calling a can of beer, beer. So
The SEO on that is not good.
So we're like, we got to come up with something better. So we came up with 10 Penny Parks. Mayor Tenpenny is trying to make the greatest theme park ever to attract all of the people to come and enjoy. Tenpenny Parks will be coming in 2022. There is some stuff up on BGG about it, mostly just some artwork. It is, I think, a lighter weight game with some very fun polyomino building of your own theme park. And so it reminds me a little about Baron Park, where you're kind of creating your zoo, if you will, with fitting the different pieces together. And there's some other elements in it as well, because as I said earlier, Keith loves to mix up the different mechanics. But this has a really amazing carousel in the center that you rotate that will kind of keep track of different rounds. So it's a 3D carousel. Very cool.
Nice.
And the Vincent Dutre art is just eye-popping. It's like we had it on the table just last night, and I was looking at it. I was like, wow, this game is colors everywhere, you know, because his stuff is so eye-popping.
Perfect for a theme park.
Yeah. So then we've got some other stuff coming. It's in the works, but let me just tell you, we have, well, this is maybe an exclusive. I don't know. We have a cyberpunk themed game coming.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's different. We haven't done a sci-fi before, really. So this is cool. This one is going to have some really interesting, I don't think I've ever played anything quite like it. So we're excited about that. I mean, believe me, we've got as long as our writers for Role Play Adventures are keen to keep writing. Both of the writers, the Ryan brothers, are both PhDs, doctors, right? So one teacher is a university professor teaching literature. So these are real writers. As long as they want to keep writing role player storybooks, we're going to keep going with that.
All right, that's fair.
We might have some jigsaw puzzles maybe coming, because, you know, you want to throw some artwork up on some jigsaw puzzles.
It seems to be a thing. I've actually seen that a fair bit. I did see there's some new role player merch, new t-shirts.
Yeah, you saw that. Sir Meeple Apparel did some really cool t-shirts for us that, you know, he's never been great, really huge about doing a lot of like merch, you know, so, but I'm kind of into it. So I thought, we'll see what we could come up with. And Rolling Dice and Taking Names podcast, maybe some of you have heard of this podcast before, but they turned me on to Tim, the owner of Sir Meeple Apparel. And he's a graphic artist, and he came up with some really cool role player shirts, one of which is inspired by the opening sequence of the Brady Bunch.
All of your
favorite role player characters. No Alice in the middle, though. So
all of them had dice of gold.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. All right. So I think it is probably time for us, unfortunately, to wrap this thing up. Tim, it has been super fun to have you on and just talking about all the stuff that I couldn't remember coming from Thunderworks Games. As you started to listen, I was like, oh, right.
I remember seeing something about that.
But
yes.
It's good that you remember. Because
that's what I do.
that's your job, man.
So if people had questions for your voluminous memory, where would they find you on the internet?
Well, so I am on the usual social media channels. So I'm on Twitter mostly. That's where I live quite often. And so you can find me at just under my name, Tim Vernig, on Twitter, on Facebook, and Instagram. So yeah, definitely hit me up there. We will be at Gen Con. We will be at Origins. We will be at PAX Unplugged. We'll be at our local con here in Madison, Wisconsin, Gamehole Con. And then we'll see what 2022, where we'll be. But we hope everybody will come by and say hi to us if you're going to cons. If not, please hit me up on the social media. Go to our website at thunderworksgames.com. You can pre-order and check out stuff there.
All right. Well, Anitra, I happen to know for a fact that there are lots of different places you can find us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and TikTok at FamilyGamersAA. Did you know that?
I did know that, especially because I'm usually the one putting up the post on TikTok and Instagram.
All right.
And of course, you can interact with us at the Family Gamers community. That's our Facebook group. And the easiest way to get there is go to thefamilygamers.com/community.
Of course, you can always just email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
I mentioned merch.
We have
Thunderworks
merch.
Games has awesome merch. We also have awesome merch. And the best way that you can check out our Family Gamers merch, our Play Games with Your Kids merch, is to go to thefamilygamers.com/merch. You see our super sweet designs.
And I will vouch for the hoodie. It is really soft.
Yes. And now that it's hoodie weather,
I'm starting to wear it a lot.
We get to wear those things a lot, which is awesome.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you have not already on your podcast catcher of choice. Tell your friends about it. And even more important than tell your friends, leave us a review, whether it's at an Apple podcast or wherever you subscribe through.
You can also find us on TuneIn, on Stitcher, on Spotify, all the things. Yeah, you can find us on all the things. Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Well, I think that's going to be it for us this week. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great to hear about all of the things that Thunderworks is doing and a little bit more about where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Anitra and Andrew. I really enjoyed talking with you, and great to share all of the Thunderworks Games goodness with all of your listeners. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Well, I think that that's going to be it for us this week. And
I hope so.
We will be enviously watching all of you having fun at Gen Con. We won't be there, but we'll be watching. We'll be listening. And until next week, everybody,
play games with your kids.